Yeah, I'm making mistakes all the time. That's part of why I want to talk about it too, is because I want other people to be more prepared. Because, you know, I was reading so much beforehand to try and make sure that I was being respectful to people. And so you read an etiquette guide and it's like, here's how you hold a chopstick, how you hold chopsticks and take off your shoes. And that's just not enough.
Yeah.
There's so much unspoken that needs to be actively performed and acted on when you're living here. And if you want to integrate, which, you know, hopefully people would, also it's just much more better for your mental health to like be in contact with people, but that information just wasn't available. And even as I started making mistakes and thinking to myself, what the heck am I doing? Like how do I retroactively learn the things that I should have known? And I go back and I read these books and papers and it still isn't there either. So that's been another reason, because every year there's you know, at least hundreds of English teachers alone who move to rural areas. Mm. And that's just English teachers. And there's also the specified skilled workers who are coming into rural areas and trying to, they've got pushes to bring in more people to beef up the numbers for the workforce. And like new people who want to maybe try and move into cheap houses and work a remote job. There's a lot of people who need to understand information about how to live well and in harmony in rural areas, and it just doesn't exist yet.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so before we get into today's episode, which is a really, really good one, some big news that I think, I hope, many of you have been waiting for. Our October Japan Real Estate Summit has just been announced, and as we've promised and are finally delivering, this one's going to be the first weekend-long two full days summit event. That's right, Saturday and Sunday, 5 and 6 October 2024 in Ibis, which is in Shibuya, Tokyo. Beautiful big new venue. We've got two floors and a roof balcony to ourselves. And the reason for that is that this time around, we're really dialing into everything that you've been asking us for in your feedback forms the last few times we held this amazing event, which, just in case you've been living under a rock, is the biggest, if not the one and only, cross-section industry event in Japan. So we're going to have the usual suspects presenting, all of our JREP Japan Real Estate Experts panel crew, Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform, the absolute master of residential and commercial renovations, Tracy Northcott, the Minpaku or short-term stay queen, Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp, our Tokyo family homes and home loan oracle, the one and only Anton Warman, internet personality, DIY guru, and interior designer who buys, renovates, and profits from Akiya abandoned homes. And speaking of Akiya, that's right, the Akiya hunter himself, Matt Ketchum, is back, ladies and gentlemen, with a vengeance. Myself as well, of course, and I'll be talking the boring investment properties and strategies that I always do. Plus, Last summit's rock stars, Daigo Sato-san, chartered accountant and tax strategies expert extraordinaire, Joey Stockermans, co-founder of Akiamart, the most exciting online platform to hit the Japanese market in, well, in forever, really. We've never had anything like it before. And he'll be joined by his partner in crime this time around and fellow co-founder, Take Kurosawa. Cannot wait to hear what those two have got cooked up for us. And that's not all. We've got some surprise new speakers that will be announced over the next few weeks. Watch this space. But more important than any of that, we're going to expand the format to allow everything that you've asked for, primarily far more networking time and space for all of you property enthusiasts to get to know each other, exchange information, strategies, join forces, learn from each other as much as you learn from our distinguished speakers or more. And we're also going to have breakout rooms and hands-on workshops with our experts, private consultations for those who want to discuss more confidential personal information with them, analyze potential deals together, get personalized advice on projects that you've got on your radar or considering to take on. And finally, not one, but two after-party events, one on Saturday evening and the other on Sunday. Still hammering the final details on those, but we'll most likely have a bit of a fancy gala dinner followed by a bit of a dance party for those who are that way inclined on Saturday, as well as the usual Summit Summary drinks event on Sunday night. Now, tickets will be on sale for either one or both days, so don't feel obliged to sign up for the entire weekend. You can come in just Saturday or just Sunday, and with the after-party events also being a separate option. So again, feel free to sign up for one or both days, any or all after-parties, whatever suits your schedule and preferences. And of course, as always, if you can't make it in person, the next best thing is also an option. You can purchase a streaming ticket, which is good for both days of the summit. All of these are at super affordable prices, as always. And if it sounds like I'm super excited about this event, it's probably because I am. I think it's going to be the best one yet, without a doubt. So the event is sponsored, as always, by realestate.jp, Emil's agency, as well as by innovatius.com, Robert Miller's web design and maintenance company, who have also sponsored the previous event back in April. And we simply cannot wait to get together with all of you again, along with the many fresh new participants for whom this will be the very first time. So welcome to the family, folks. Now, this time around, early bird discounts will only be available to those among you who pre-register in the next week or two before ticketing goes live. You can do that at summit.realestate.jp. We'll link to the webpage in this episode show notes, of course. So hop over there right now. That's right, pause the podcast, I don't mind, and go to summit.realestate.jp to pre-register your attendance and enjoy between 10 to 15% off ticket prices. I'm pretty sure you need no convincing if you've been to one of the previous summits. This is already the fourth one that we were holding, but they just keep getting better. And just in case you haven't been to one, we'll also link to some of the highlight reels from the previous summits in this episode show notes, just to give you a taste. So mark the dates in your calendar, 5 and 6 October, call the babysitter, and if you're joining via the stream Zoom room, make sure you've got your snacks, your drinks, and your notepads ready. It is going to be a fabulous weekend, guaranteed. And again, summit.realestate.jp. Pre-register for the discounted tickets now. That offer will be gone as soon as the ticketing page goes live. So you've only got about a week, maybe a week and a half, to secure those cheap tickets before they go. All right, so for today's episode, this one is a really special one, I think you're going to love it. We talked to Bethany Nakamura, or as she's better known on YouTube, where she's amassed a very nice following of about 40,000 people, Bitsy in Inaka. We'll link to her channel, Instagram profile, and website in this episode show notes, of course. She's a Canadian who's lived and worked in the US as an interior designer, and has then, for reasons you'll hear about in this episode, moved to Japan and found herself in serious Inaka land, so deep, deep in the Japanese countryside, where she's not only living, but also documenting her life. So she's sharing everything from her daily routines to cute and funny observations, as well as some deeper and sometimes painful musings on life here in Japan, and more specifically in the Japanese Inaka, the countryside. So as you can probably imagine, she's living in one of those internationally famous Akiya homes, which so many of our clients and others like them are so interested in, but are often not aware of the caveats attached to those houses, as well as to life in those areas. So we talk about her personal story, what brought her here,
life in the Japanese countryside, of course, and why she and others like her would even want to live in that very unique environment. So we cover everything from cost of living to daily challenges, and not just due to the fact that she's all the way out there in the country, but also being a foreigner and a woman at that, social integration, the related commitments and obligations that come with those, the inevitable culture shock that she and many like her go through, which can last a lot longer than many of us think. And then some deeper conversations as well about social hierarchies in Japanese society, how Japanese spouses handle the friction between their non-Japanese partner and the local communities surrounding them, what it's like living in and DIYing, renovating a kominka, traditional Japanese farmstead kind of home, the constant barrage of cultural differences that come with relocating to Japan in general, and who really is this Inaka life suitable for or not suitable for. We also talk about establishing your support network, how to get on the locals' good side, and bugs. Spoiler alert, there are heaps of bugs in the Japanese countryside. So all in all, a fun but sometimes a bit sad, light but sometimes quite deep conversation with a very lovely person, I find, and very eye-opening, even for those among us who already know Japan and its quirks, and definitely even more so for those among you who have not lived here or have only lived in the bigger cities in Japan. So lean back, grab yourself a drink or two, and enjoy the conversation. I shall see you again on the other side. Awesome. So thank you for agreeing to talk to me.
My pleasure.
Is it Bethany or Bitsy, or which do you prefer?
You know, I've got so many names these days because my Japanese name is Bethany, or the locals started calling me Beko-chan, which is like, it's not related to my name at all, but that's what they decided to go with. So,
right.
You know, you've got a lot of choices. How about Bethany? That's fine.
Bethany it is. So I think if I remember right from your videos, and the ones that I like the most are actually not the ones we're going to talk about, but this is a Japan real estate podcast, so we're going to talk about like Akiya and stuff. But I really love your videos about just adjusting to life in Japan in general.
Thank you.
There's so many insights there. But okay, so before we dive like into any particular rabbit hole, maybe like a comic book number one kind of origin story. How did you end up here? What did you do before you ended up here? A little bit about you.
Sure. So I was born in Canada, but I lived most of my life in the US. I was a licensed commercial interior designer in the US, and I worked in Minneapolis, New York City, and Seattle. And I just hit burnout really hard, to this point of depression where I felt like I didn't even know how to get back in touch with myself again. So I was reading this article that said, in order to find your true happiness, think about what you loved when you were a kid. And when I was a kid, I loved Totoro and Sailor Moon, and I would spend hours in the computer lab reading about green tea and kimono. And so I thought, you know, I always wanted to be, of all things, I wanted to be an English teacher when I was a kid. So I took a working sabbatical, and that's what I did. And now 2.5 years later, and I haven't really been here that long at all. Unexpectedly, I ended up finding the person that I wanted to get married to, who was born in Tokyo, but happened to move to Ehime Prefecture at the same time that I did. And now we're kind of building our dream home in this very rural mountain homestead that has four buildings where, you know, the rent is crazy affordable, which I imagine you may have heard of.
Yeah.
But we've got chickens and a goose, and we're figuring out how to make that work now, and kind of trying to design our own new dream life, which is, you know, it all sounds great. It's extremely stressful.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah. But wait, I'll unpack that in a minute. But I want to just backtrack to what you said before when you were talking about hitting burnout. Was that, were you employed? Were you self-employed? Like, what was your scenario there? What was it that led you to that feeling?
Yeah, at that moment, I was living in New York City, and I had moved there based on some professional advice that I had gotten from Minneapolis. And it seemed like this great opportunity to level up my career and do the kind of work that I wanted to do. And I was being invited to do all of these different kinds of design collaborations for furniture and textiles. And I was so excited about it. And then I ended up living in over an hour's subway commute away from my office, my employer's office in Manhattan. And it just was a horrible fit. I also have a lot of like very closely held ideas about my values with kind of how the industry fits with consumer lifestyle and materialism that just were kind of pushed to their limit in New York City specifically. And then the pandemic started. So on top of this position that I felt uncomfortable with that was out of alignment with my values, the stress of the pandemic in New York City was happening. And at that point in time, it was so awful and the infrastructure was so overloaded that, you know, they were piling, I haven't talked about this on the internet before, but they were piling dead bodies in Central Park because there was not enough room. They had brought in, you know, like frozen food storage trucks for all of the people who had passed away. It was just a nightmare. And so I was working from home, but I had started out in Brooklyn, then I moved to Jersey City because it less taxes, less city taxes. But so I was in my apartment in New York City working from home in my apartment and burned out because of the misalignment of values. There was the pandemic. And then at the same time as that, I don't know how much I know, like across the world, there's a different level of exposure to that particular news event, but the George Floyd murder in Minneapolis. And I had lived in Minneapolis for 17 years. So I was also watching live stream video of this place that I considered to be my hometown on fire. Literally, they had burned down this huge condo building, a 17-story building, in protest next to the police station. And it was too much to handle. So, you know, I've said that
right there, right?
Hmm?
Recipe for PTSD right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not a great mental health moment for myself. You know, I've always told a very abbreviated story about me hitting out burnout in New York City of being a designer. And then I go to Japan and like, and then, you know, it's just that fast. But really, it was like many months and a lot of different events that were very serious happening. And maybe more of a low than I've ever like really led on to on the internet before. Because we, you know, we always talk about Japan, right? So
yeah. So you dialed into your childhood infatuation with Japanese culture and then you just decided to just like jump on an airplane and see how it goes, kind of thing?
It was a bit longer than that. I had applied for the JET program 2 years in a row and just eventually got it. And that's how I ended up in Shikoku. I didn't know anything about Shikoku before. It was just a chance position that they sent me out here for work.
Okay. And then you start working there with the JET program, I assume?
Yes, yeah. That's right.
And then how did you, English teachers don't have that much of a social life usually, especially not with a native. So how did you end up meeting your husband?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I don't know how my life experience here has been so different than a lot of other people's experiences that I've heard. Basically, what it was I maybe just went out of my way to, you know, I was a lot older than the other English teachers. So it wasn't like the most natural thing for me to hang out with them, for them to be my social group. And, you know, I had this different motivation for being there, maybe a different direction than them and a different kind of draw to really get in touch with people. So I just went to the town hall and said, I want to participate. And do you have like cultural clubs or events? And ended up going to some classes and getting involved. And, you know, that's how I met my friends and my husband. I've never really had the kind of foreigner bubble that people talk about. You know, a lot of
it's
people come
here.
It's
amazing that you say that because I keep talking to people, and you know how there's always this, oh, you'll never be accepted in Japan by the Japanese. And you're like the poster child of how untrue that is, right?
Well, I don't think I'm fully accepted, but
I'm not in the bubble.
You can
be a part of them, right? Yeah.
Yes. I am integrated at times, whether I want to be or not. I am integrated in the community. I don't have any foreign friends that I've talked like in Japan that I've talked to for the past many weeks. There's no one in my general area. Nobody speaks English, and I didn't come here with anyone. It's very different than all of the other content that I've seen people publishing, which I think is like also why I feel so driven to share my experiences, because they're like, you know, right in there, and maybe have a different level of authenticity or a rarity that people might not usually have exposure to.
Mm. Definitely, that's very evident in your content too. So how did you, were you in the Inaka from the get-go, or was that a move that you made together, or how did that turn out?
No, I was at the furthest tip of Shikoku Island right from the get-go.
Wow.
I had Japan Planet Travel Guide or something like that. And after I got my assignment, my location assignment, I was so excited. I opened up like, oh, where in Shikoku am I? And it wasn't on the map. Like it was literally cropped off because there was nothing there. And so like they didn't even talk about it at all. They didn't name the town. And that's where I lived for the entire time that I was teaching English until I got married and moved in with my husband.
So were you the only foreigner in town? Literally?
There were two or three other English teachers. But we're all spread out. So maybe the next closest person was about a 30-minute drive away.
Okay. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's akiya-mart, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Very remote.
You said while I was teaching English, so you've quit that since then, have you?
Yes. Yeah. I did that for about a year and a half, I believe. And now I'm focusing on, I do content creation and digital marketing, and most of that is for clients that, you know, people don't know that I'm working for, and it's all kind of behind the scenes.
Okay, so you the hidden hand that actually does the marketing that makes it look like they're doing it, kind of thing.
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, cool. So you work from home, which I guess kind of lends itself to the Inaka life experience. It'd be difficult to work for like a big corporate or what. And what does your husband do?
So he is a kyoroktai, which his position is coming to an end. But that is what that means is he's a part of a rural revitalization cooperative.
Okay.
That's a government position. So the purpose is to bring skilled people from urban areas into rural areas as a way to revitalize and bring in young people who want to start a business or work with other people. So he's been a part of that program for just about 2 years now. Before that, he was living in Chiba. And this is the first time that he has lived in the Inaka as well. So we've got kind of an interesting dynamic here too, because he is Japanese, but he's still an outsider. And I'm foreign and I'm an outsider. So there's, we both actually have to kind of try extra hard to make sure that we're showing up and participating and not stepping on anybody's feet and that kind of thing.
And that's a big part of life in these rural areas, isn't it? It's like everyone's nose is in your business on the one hand, but on the other hand, you want to not get too much in their business so that they don't dislike you, right? There's a fine balance to be struck there.
Yeah, I'm making mistakes all the time. That's part of why I want to talk about it too, is because I want other people to be more prepared. Because, you know, I was reading so much beforehand to try and make sure that I was being respectful to people. And so you read an etiquette guide and it's like, here's how you hold a chopsticks and take off your shoes. And that's just not enough.
Yeah.
There's so much unspoken that needs to be actively performed and acted on when you're living here. And if you want to integrate, which, you know, hopefully people would, also it's just much more better for your mental health to like be in contact with people, but that information just wasn't available. And even as I started making mistakes and thinking to myself, what the heck am I doing? Like, how do I retroactively learn the things that I should have known? And I go back and I read these books and papers and it still isn't there either. So that's been another reason, because every year there's you know, at least hundreds of English teachers alone who move to rural areas. Mm. And that's just English teachers. And there's also the specified skilled workers who are coming into rural areas and trying to, they've got pushes to bring in more people to beef up the numbers for the workforce. And like new people who want to maybe try and move into cheap houses and work a remote job. There's a lot of people who need to understand information about how to live well and in harmony in rural areas, and it just doesn't exist yet.
Doesn't exist that much even in Japanese, I would say, but definitely not in English. So
that makes sense.
So your husband works in one of those initiatives that we keep reading about, where the local municipality will partly or fully subsidize usually youngish, I guess, families who want to relocate and actively contribute, not like buy a holiday home, but actively live there and start a business or work with the local industries in one way or another. And then the local municipalities subsidize them over a period of time. There's all kinds of terms and conditions attached to that, right?
Yes, that's right.
Did you benefit from that program when you moved?
No, it is a salaried position, and he has regular duties at town hall. So it's like a normal job. But
you are already there. You are not relocating to the Inaka. So you don't qualify, kind of thing? Or?
I guess I could have qualified to do it. Foreigners are eligible to participate in the program. Mm. Most people who participate are Japanese people from urban areas, but foreigners can do it too. We've got someone in Ozu from Spain. Who is in that position doing some really cool stuff. But no, it's not something that I participated in. And, you know, it's just when in those positions, you still have to report to town hall. And I'm trying as much as I can to do the kind of creative publishing work that I want to do. And also there's so much bureaucracy working at town hall. So it didn't seem like the right fit for me. But
gotcha.
I'm still like kind of on the fringe of being involved, because as someone in that position's wife, I am still expected to kind of show up at a lot of events and things.
As you would. No, but I meant more like yourselves as a family, because you've obviously relocated to an Inaka kind of area. So regardless of his position, maybe you would have been eligible for some subsidies and stuff, no?
You know, I don't know.
Okay, don't worry about it. Okay, so you move there and you're kind of
fresh in Japan overall at that time. Definitely, wet around the ears when it comes to Inaka living.
Yes.
So can you share some of that first few months of experience? Not necessarily about the property itself and the house and dealing with that, but just life in that area. What sort of, I don't know, what sort of hurdles do you run into first and foremost that you didn't expect?
Well, I mentioned like going back and trying to figure out what the heck's going on with living in Japan. I was also reading about like the process of culture shock. And I was anticipating culture shock, but actually the first, I think, year and a half was just pure honeymoon phase. And it lasted so long that I thought it wasn't a phase. And I thought, you know, everything here is perfect. This is so great. And then it did stop. But my first exposure or time living in the Inaka was just kind of a full dream. I landed, was picked up by my work supervisor, and we drove down a beautiful road with pink skies next to the sea. And I was only paying about, you know, $50 USD a month for rent, which is just unheard of. And my job was easy and everyone was polite. And I could just it was perfect timing for me coming from such a low point and such incredible burnout. It gave me a great chance to kind of recuperate. And then, you know, things wear off over time, and you know, I still haven't been here that long, but that first couple of months was just like pure seaside dream.
And obstacles.
Well, language is an easy obstacle. I think one of the biggest things that I still have not figured out how to manage yet, and something that I have just like guttural distaste for, is the extreme hierarchies in place, social hierarchies. I probably not surprising for anyone who's been at least semi up to date on Japanese society, but you know, women are below men, foreigners are below Japanese people, outsiders are below locals, and age hierarchy is like the be all end all. So basically, grandpas are in charge of everything in the countryside, and the way that the population is, most people here are grandmas and grandpas. We live in a town with a couple hundred people. They're mostly above 70. I was at a party one time and the youngest person besides us was 58, which is not old, but for being the youngest person there, it's kind of unusual.
And
how that kind of unfolds into our lives is, in the Inaka, it's very normal for older people to ask favors of younger people. When there are no younger people, you've got 400 grandmas and grandpas asking two people for favors. And it's really unmanageable and hard to navigate, especially for outsiders. And people who are trying to do their best to fit in and be nice and say yes, because you don't want to step on anybody's feet. You don't want to ruin the politics. You don't want to get a bad rep right away. But it's just a difficult situation to be in. I think that, you know, that's part of the reason why so many young people end up moving to urban areas, is because of this imbalance of obligation because of the age structure. But that has been really difficult to navigate.
So when you say it's difficult to navigate, I totally get what you're saying. From my own perspective as the foreigner in a mixed nationality couple, how does your husband deal with that? On the one hand, the pressure from the grandpas and grandmas, on the other hand, having a spouse who is clearly not happy with this whole scenario. and he kind of needs to navigate between the two of you, I guess, the two, yourself and the group, I guess, because that's a situation my wife is often in. So I'm guessing it's the same, right?
Maybe so. So the way that it's working for us right now is he usually says yes, because he's that kind of Japanese person. Mm. And then he gets overbooked and super stressed out. And then because he's outside in the community doing work with people, and people don't really include me that much, which I don't have a problem with. It's just because, you know, I'm not good at Japanese and they don't know how to communicate, or like they're kind of afraid, nervous to speak to me. It's okay with me. But so he takes on the brunt of the interactions, and then gets burnt out. And he also has his job and agricultural responsibilities. And he's also a boat driver for a tourist thing in town. And so he's got all of that going on. And then I'm at home, and there's just by default, because I'm here, as well as adjacent to, I think, some ingrained Japanese expectations of domestic responsibilities, I have like become the default housewife, which I don't really like. And then I'm also trying to manage remote work without talking to anybody in person. You know, it's pretty stressful.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Mm. You've moved there how long ago? Like 2 years?
Let's see. Just under a year.
Just under a year. Okay. Any signs of improvement in the dynamics at all?
Slowly. I have had some side conversations with a local auntie and said, you know, this is kind of what's happening. I think slowly what's happening is like by way of gossip, you know, without having to confront anyone directly.
Reverse gossip. I love it. It works.
Yeah. This reverse gossip is going around that, you know, it's too much work and, you know, Koichi is so nice. And so he's so nice. He wants to help everybody, but it's impossible. And so we should like give him more of a break. I think it'll work out okay. Yeah. But it is kind of a funny way to address that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay. So hopefully this will improve, but I want to talk practicalities, infrastructures, not, I mean, obviously with the house that you're living in as a focus, but it's not just the house, it's everything around it, right? It's transportation and shopping and
sure.
what's available and not available. How do you get around? How do you get things that you need? How has that experience been?
Well, it's not convenient. I think, you know, I have posted content on the internet about free houses and cheap houses, and people are like, oh, it's misleading because that, you know, they get angry. And I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to sugarcoat this. My username is Bitsy in Inaka. I'm in the Inaka. I'm far away. And that is the truth. And so we are a 40-minute drive from a grocery store. We are a 30-minute drive from a convenience
store. Grocery store, not like supermarket department store. We're talking grocery store.
There's like the main town. There's a Cosmos. There's a few other larger ones. But yeah, no, you can't buy.
That's a 40-minute drive. Okay.
A 40-minute drive. Yeah. We do not have city water. Our water comes from the mountain. It comes into a cistern and then it's pumped into our house. So we just have mountain water through our house, which is kind of cool and like a little weird because sometimes it gets disconnected and one of us will drive into the mountain and try and scoop out the rocks from these pipes. So it's not like a solid infrastructure.
Yeah.
The airport is about an hour and a half drive away. I guess that's not too bad. There's no schools close, maybe 45 minutes away. But what we do have is land, and we grow vegetables and we have chickens that are too young to have eggs yet. But and then there's, you know, shishi, local wild boar that a lot of the grandpas trap. And so we get to benefit from that sometimes, which not everybody likes that. I love it because it's free and supposedly higher in vitamin D. But
yeah,
it's rural. It's not this hidden secret. It's just, you know, out in the open. We don't pay rent, and as a result of that, we're far away from everything.
And how does that play into stuff that you need to get done in the house? Yeah, you're in a house, right? I'm assuming there's no apartment blocks where you're at.
No apartments around here.
Old traditional Japanese wooden house kind of thing.
Our plot has four buildings, two warehouses, one 100-year-old kominka, and then one two-level concrete construction building. So we usually stay in the newer concrete house, and we're in the process of renovating the kominka in participation with the landlord as a partnership, which is great. We're actually right now in the process of having a new roof put on, which is very exciting. But yeah, so we live here, four buildings, two houses.
And you're DIYing the kominka? Or
some of it will be DIY. We've got pros doing the roof. There will be pros doing termite treatment and prevention. I will be doing a lot of the interior work, but we'll probably be having pros come in to do shikui plaster, which I'm very excited about. I'm a nerd for wall finishes.
Yep.
So a combo. The concrete house is mostly Bethany DIY work, just super down and dirty budget kind of stuff. No fancy shikui in here. I'm just, you know, painting the kitchen and trying to pull together these random abandoned furniture pieces to make this a clean and pleasant living space. Nothing super fancy though.
What would you say, and I guess is my question, because it's stuff that we keep talking to people about, but you're actually living it. What do you see that you could tell somebody who's got, let's say they've either haven't been to Japan or they've been to Japan and have sort of Airbnb'd their way through the countryside, and they've got this dream of the perfect holiday home that they're going to buy for a couple of $1,000 in the Japanese countryside, and they'll be living the dream from day one. What sort of message would you relay to them? to align expectations with reality kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really, it's a really strange thing to talk about, because in so many ways, my life is a dream. It, you know, it, this is a beautiful place. The rent is free. We've got spring water and chickens and fresh vegetables. And I just go out for lunch and grab some lettuce. And that, like, that's such a beautiful, simple luxury. The truth is that the quality of my life is much more defined by my social position here than it is by my beautiful house. So there was actually this really, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was this really funny, I mean, it's not funny, it's not a comedy commercial, but Kochi Prefecture, which is the next prefecture over, published a commercial a few years ago, because not just for foreign people, but for Japanese people, slow countryside life is this idyllic idea, this aspiration. And a lot of people in Japan were moving from urban areas to rural areas, looking for low cost of life and friendly neighbors and fresh vegetables and things like that. So they did, they were successful. They had a lot of people moving to Kochi, but almost 20% of those people gave up and left. Now, whether they went to another country place or back to the city, I'm not sure, but they put out this commercial that was a guy from Tokyo trying to teach himself how to fish. And then one of the locals comes up and he's wearing an alien mask. And basically the point is to say that, you know, rural Japan can be much more alien than expected, even for urban Japanese people. So for English people or English speaking people, Western people coming, wanting to move to rural Japan, I think the big thing is just to anticipate that this is a foreign country. And we use the word foreign in English to talk about things that we don't understand. So when you get here, you're going to discover a lot of things that you don't understand. And it might not be, you know, in the first 2 weeks, it might not be if you're trying to do a short-term stay to see what it's really like for 6 months, it might be 3 years down the road that, you know, some people come here, get married, have kids, and then realize, oh no, you know, yeah. I didn't realize that there was this thing that I didn't expect that is a deal breaker. So I, you know, honestly, I do get really concerned also because, you know, I'm reading a lot of comments from people on my YouTube and Instagram, people asking kind of basic questions like, do I need to learn Japanese? Like, yeah, and that's yeah. that's a really, really low bar that we're like, you know, kind of on the fence about. So when it gets to something really difficult, you know, that's going to be an absolute no. Yeah. And there are a lot of really difficult things that you'll come across, especially in rural Japan.
Who would you say this sort of life switch be more suitable for, less suitable for, character-wise, age-wise, I don't know, whatever comes to mind?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I'm not totally sure. I've thought about this before. I think that who this works for, one is, you know, people who have Japanese family, people who want to come here and be more close to their parents or grandparents or something like that, or they have a Japanese spouse and they want to get more in touch with their spouse or their, you know, family heritage. I think that is a great person to come here. People who don't have Japanese family, I think, need to have a lot of patience and flexibility. In my humble opinion, I think that, you know, what people might discover, and you know, people have termed this, you know, the true cost of a free house, but you know, whether it is or not, I don't know. But I think what people will discover is that when you come here, you have to give some things up. You have to give up maybe a super strong position that you feel is moral and a part of your core. You might learn that here, the opposite is true. Or maybe it's access to, you know, the kinds of amenities or products that you used to be used to getting. You know, I can't even, you know, I don't care.
Like
about
you said,
this
water, much, sewage, like, very basic stuff that.
I guess water is kind of a basic thing. I was thinking shampoo, but I guess my head was elsewhere.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
There's a lot of inconveniences. And it's hard. It's hard. It can be really hard on mental health. They said that during the pandemic and quarantine, it wasn't just a pandemic of this illness, but it was a mental health pandemic because people were quarantining so isolated. When you move to rural Japan, you are very isolated. Your friends and family back home are on a totally different time clock. And as much as I don't want to feel like this is the truth, you know, if you're not there, like, you know, you just kind of fall out of touch with people and it gets really hard to be in contact. That's difficult. I'm not close to any other foreigners. And it's people, you know, kind of bash this idea of being in the foreigner bubble. I wish I had a foreigner bubble because my mental health would be a lot better padded, right? Mm. I could talk about things that I kind of like just need to get out of my system or need someone to relate with who will understand me. Even if I talk to my husband here and I have this problem and I'm like, I'm so confused. Why did this happen? I'm not going to get the same kind of comfort response as if I'm talking to my friend back home who's like, what? Would that happen? I can't believe that. And yeah. I'm like, yes, that's the response I was looking for. That's how I felt too. You know, that kind of being able to relate and blow off steam about things. But yeah.
how do you feel now that you've been here for about a year now? What's your routine when you need to de-stress or distance yourself from this kind of environment? I mean, on the one hand, like you're saying, it's very idyllic. On the other hand, it can be very constrictive after a very short time, I would think, from what you're describing. So where do you go? What do you do when you need to just recenter yourself?
Recently, I go out and I pet my chickens. That sounds like such a nerdy thing, but no, I just hang out with my chickens. They're so cute. You should see them on Instagram. Very fluffy.
Holiday at all? No?
Sometimes. We're a little bit broke, though, and very busy. I do want to get around and go see some other people who are doing the homesteading thing. In rural Japan, I would love to see how they do that, how, like, what their approach is. We've gone to Tokyo a couple of times since my in-laws are there, you know. Yeah, and I've got friends there. But I don't know. I guess I feel like kind of old saying this, but I just like staying at home and being lazy.
No, that means that, you know, regardless of all the challenges, this is where you want to be, right? This is,
I guess so. That's really comforting to hear. Yeah. Sometimes I you know, make time to schedule a call with someone back home. And I did have, actually, we are looking forward to having a lot of overseas people, some of my friends visit. So it's not really a vacation, but, you know, that can be a really
vacation big... coming to you. That's even better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of a load off and a fun, you know, we go and do touristy things around here together. And like one of my friends who was just here, we went and saw Cat Island for the first time.
Yeah.
Took the ferry out there. So yeah, chickens and having visitors, and we'll be doing some domestic travel.
How do you feel when you get out to I mean, Tokyo is probably the most extreme example possible. How do you feel getting out of the countryside and into the big city and then going back?
I'm always glad to come back. I am an introvert by nature. And I think the older
I get... the social media influencer. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I just talk to a camera. I'm alone.
Right.
but yeah, I'm an introvert. And so when I go to big cities, it's really exhausting. And I'm always glad to come back. And it's quiet here. You know, all I can hear outside is like the breeze and the frogs. Yeah, it's exhausting. I do enjoy, sometimes I get out there and I'm like, oh, I do kind of miss this, but it's just something that you end up accepting and saying, okay, there is no 100% life situation to put yourself into, and there's pros and cons everywhere, and this is where I want to be right now.
Very cool. Last word of I don't know, advice or opinion. What do you think about people who are not moving to the Naka, but want to spend a few months a year in an idyllic setting like that? So they buy one of these old houses, they maybe renovate it a little bit. They're still out in the sticks, but they don't necessarily. Do you think that, I don't know how many of these types of holiday homeowners are in your environment, but do you feel like they still need to be concerned about being accepted into the local societal structures, or are they just like tourists coming in and out and they don't really need to worry that much about stuff? How would you feel about that?
I think it's a great idea, actually. You do absolutely have to make sure that you are not stepping on people's feet and maintaining relationships and getting out there and trying to contribute. Teamwork is such a big part of living in rural areas. For example, like we've got teams of people a couple times a year who all come together and all of the dudes cut weeds on the side of the road. So understanding that if you're not there and other people are doing that, there could be a possibility that people feel a little bit, you know, taken advantage of. So you have to do something to make up for it. Basically, like any opportunity that there could be for you to step on someone's shoes, even if they don't get offended, you know, it's safer to go out of your way to be extra nice to people and extra careful about that, because it's simply not worth it if it goes wrong. But I do think that it is possible. And if you're only spending a couple of months out in the countryside, I think that can also give you some additional freedoms. To say, like, well, if it just ends up being too much obligation requests or assistance requests, you know, oh, I have to go back home right now. Or, you know, maybe you can go in and out a little bit more discreetly. And that would be a great freedom for that person who has a vacation home. There's probably going to be the issues of maintenance, since it's high humidity and you know, in rural areas, you'll probably have a harder time finding people to help with that. But I think it can be a good option.
By the way, you mentioned that maintenance thing. How are you dealing with bugs and wildlife in those circumstances? There's got to be a lot of that, right?
Yes, there are a lot of bugs. I don't love them. I don't have. I just kind of have gotten used to them, I guess. That's not what people want to hear, probably. We have Mukade, the poisonous centipedes. I have Mukade spray.
I didn't even realize there was a Mukade spray. Okay, I stand it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's, it's just something that I've had to get used to.
Yeah. And how did your husband get used to that coming in from the Tokyo environment that he did?
You know, he's always been a kind of a, well, he's a gardener. He's always been outside. Yeah. And he also has traveled to India and Thailand and did wolfing in New Zealand. So always outdoors, always around.
Okay, so not your typical Japanese city boy at all.
That's right. Yeah. He was in Chiba doing garden work, but he's always been outside. He went to like an agricultural high school. He's an outdoorsy guy. He's okay with it. He's fine.
Interesting. Cool. So I hope, I don't know what I can wish for you except to get some more downtime. I hope you you don't remain broke for long and you can take some holidays. Like Thailand and India sounds nice, actually.
Yeah. Where do I want to go? I want to go to Chiang Mai. Yeah. I think that would be great. Or Fukuoka.
Oh, Fukuoka, please, please come by.
Yeah, I would love that. Okay.
We are here. I'll be there.
I'll be there next weekend.
Fantastic. I'll still be here. Oh, no, next weekend. I'll be here Sunday night if you happen to. Are you really coming to Fukuoka next weekend?
No. I'll visit you as soon as possible.
Please do. Awesome. Thank you for your time.
And yeah, thank you, Ziv. It was so nice talking to you.
Same here. Looking for updates soon.
Yeah. Cheers. Okay.
So there you have it. The lovely Bitsy in Inaka, Bethany Nakamura herself. You definitely want to check out and subscribe to her YouTube channel, follow her on her Instagram, and do check out her website. She does some amazing work. We will link to all of those in this episode show notes, as mentioned, and also to the registration page for this coming October Japan Real Estate Summit in Shibuya, Tokyo, Saturday and Sunday, 5 and 6 October. Grab your ticket for one or both days, in person or streaming, at summit.realestate.jp. You do not want to miss this one. It's going to be a blast. More speakers, more networking, more hands-on workshops, and a pretty nice discount if you register right now before tickets go live in a week or two. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!